Good morning. This is David Bennett, and this is Bitcoin And, a podcast where I try to find the edge effect between the worlds of Bitcoin, gaming, permaculture, podcasting, and education to gain a better understanding of all. Edge effect is a concept from ecology describing a greater diversity of life where the edges of two systems overlap. While species from either system can be found at the edge, it is important to note there are species in the overlap that exist in neither system, and that is what I seek to uncover. So join me in discovering the variety of things being created as Bitcoin rubs up against other systems.
Good morning. It's 9:23 a.m. Central Daylight Time, May the 31st, 2019. This is episode 102 of Bitcoin And. Woo! There's some serious butthurt going on out there. Try to keep it together. Blue Matt and some other people get into it. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think in like a month, nobody's even going to remember. But, man, the butthurt out there is just super, super deep. So, you know, be prepared for people just losing their minds on you, because it looks like, you know, to me, this whole thing's kind of been bubbling up for a long time, and something was bound to break down. And I think it was, and somebody else, I think it was Samson. Samson is, I think it's pronounced Mo. I used to call it Mal, but I don't think it is, because I think I heard him say his own name was Mo, Samson Mo. So I think it was him that was responding to Blue Matt, because Blue Matt blocked him or whatever and all that. Said it was the straw that broke the camel's back kind of thing. It was either him or Blue Matt. I tend to agree, but I don't think the pressure release valve went all the way off, if you know what I'm talking about. So be prepared in the weeks and, you know, in the coming weeks to have some more blowups like this. So on a happy note, I would like to say congratulations to Blue Wallet and tell them happy birthday, Blue Wallet, because apparently today is their first year anniversary, or their very first birthday. They tweet out, Blue is now 1 year old. Happy birthday to us, all contributors, all users, and the community. Thank you for all the support over this year. We are extremely grateful and pumped to keep building, onboarding one user at a time. There will be sats today. Keep an eye open. All right, so cool. That means that they're probably going to be airdropping. All their airdrops will probably be already done by the time that you guys, that I get this uploaded, and if SoundCloud doesn't like decide to like barf all over my upload like it did Wednesday, which is why it was so damn late. I had to upload that thing 3 or 4 times to get it to for their processing to actually go through the entire processing thing. And this is about the third time this kind of thing has happened. And I am very seriously thinking about moving over to another platform, because SoundCloud is just seems a little bit unstable for this kind of thing. In either event, happy birthday, Blue Wallet. Glad you were still with us. I use your product. That was one of the first custodial Lightning wallets that I have used, just to check it out. And it is custodial, by the way, people be aware. If you do not like having somebody custodying your stuff, then don't use Blue Wallet. But if you're just going to keep like a few bucks on a wallet somewhere, I don't know why people get the heebie-jeebies. If you're keeping like all of your wealth on there, don't. That's just dumb. That's like keeping your Bitcoin on an exchange. But for a few bucks, 10 bucks, you know, up to, you know, maybe whatever your pain tolerance is, mine is 50, you know, something like that. And after that, I get a little nervous and want to put it onto a full cold card wallet. I am going to get a cold card wallet. But yeah, so just be aware, it is a custody. It is a wallet of custody. So that means it's not your keys and not your coin. And that's all I got to say about that. I have run across this thing called Leden, which is yet one more of those HODL spellings variant of the word lend, right? So this is HODL with Leden. account, the Twitter account, and their website is ledn.io. And what is it? Well, it looks to be that you can earn interest on your Bitcoin. Again, this is obviously custodial. Okay, so I have no idea. They seem kind of new. I haven't really heard a whole lot about them. So, but their website basically says, "Welcome to Ledin, a better home for your Bitcoin. Ledin offers a suite of products for you to make the most of your digital assets. Our savings products can provide you with extra yield. Our credit products help you keep your Bitcoin and access dollars, or use the borrowed funds to purchase more." And they say that their Bitcoin savings account will compound 5.1% monthly. I don't know. Like I said, it's custodial, so I'm, you know, at this point, I got the heebie-jeebies. And interest. I mean, we used to have this thing called interest in the banks. It used to work. It doesn't anymore because they screwed up the banking system so bad with all the fiat money. But other than that, their other product is dollar loans backed with Bitcoin, and apparently they will loan you up to 50% of whatever digital asset that they're going to accept. And right now, it looks to me, they say digital asset, but they just keep saying referring to Bitcoin. So, you know, whatever. So you can go check them out if you want, ledn.io. Again, it's obviously going to be custodial, so, you know, watch out. Getting on up into the stack, BitRefill and Async company has struck a Lightning channel. BitRefill says, "The first 1BTC Lightning channel is live on mainnet. We're happy to share that at BitRefill, in collaboration with at async_co and their Eclair implementation, has opened the first 1BTC public channel on the Lightning Network, #reckless. Learn more here." So let's go here. This is a Medium post out of, or not, no, this is off of BitRefill's blog. From BitRefill, this was done a couple of days ago. "The first 1BTC Lightning channel is live on mainnet. We're happy to share that BitRefill, in collaboration with Async and their Eclair implementation, has opened the first 1BTC public channel on the Lightning Network. This is a customization of the current specification that removes the 0.167 BTC channel limit. We have tested the channel and already transacted across it. In the near future, we will work to leverage this capability to lift the payment limits for people shopping at BitRefill.com and bring increased liquidity to other aspects of the network and our Thor products. It was awesome working with Async on this, and we really appreciate all of their work to make this possible with us. We are strong believers that the Lightning Network is a big part of Bitcoin's future and are happy to have people that are willing to be reckless with us. If you would like to learn more or collaborate with us to make more fat channels that add utility to your platform, please get in touch." So if you're needing some fatter channels, BitRefill is and Async seem to be your guys. So that's pretty cool, man. A full 1BTC Lightning channel is live, not on testnet, guys, on mainnet, a full BTC, which basically at 1.16, so they basically 6x'd the size of a Lightning Network channel. 6x, guys, six times the capacity of the largest capacity allowable. So now these things are getting, these limits are getting removed. The governors are getting, you know, the gloves are getting taken off. The governors are being pulled back. This is cool. I mean, a full BTC liquidity in a single Lightning Network channel. I'm not sure how you're going to stop anything like that. All right, this next one is going to be difficult. It's going to be really, really difficult because it's from Bitcoin.com. It is about solar power. So what I'm going to try to do is try to delete, as I read this, all references to their shitcoin and only refer to actual Bitcoin. "Choosing to mine Bitcoin over selling power to the grid. Mining cryptocurrencies like BTC utilizes electricity in order to power the ASIC machines that profit from mining coins. Over the last few years, as digital assets have grown more popular and the SHA-256 hash rate the BTC consensus algorithm has climbed to all-time highs. People have complained that the amount of energy used to mine is excessive. However, while some people spend a lot of time debating whether or not mining is using too much energy, there are lots of miners using a variety of renewable energy methods like wind power, hydropower, and solar. A great example of this can be seen in Christian Anders' explanation of how he was making money using excess solar to mine Bitcoin. Then he was selling the energy to the power station. Quote, "Time to start your miners tonight, almost free energy in Stockholm tomorrow. Instead of selling my surplus solar energy, I mine Bitcoin," end quote. Ander remarked, 1 kilowatt hour looks like 1.16 kroners or about 12 cents US. That is more than 10 times the money if I would sell it to the grid using the most common miners on the market, $100 each, which convert 1.3 kilowatts to one BTC. I'm not sure about those numbers at all, man, but whatever. Right now, certain miners in China and Canada are using hydropower to help offset electric costs, and the other mining operators use low-cost geothermal power in Iceland as well. But Ander isn't the only person who has furthered the idea of minting digital assets with solar power. Lots of people have been promoting the concept while the SHA-256 hash rate climbs exponentially, pushing operators towards greener energy solutions. For instance, on July 1st, 2017, a man from San Diego detailed how he's been mining in the desert with 25 S9 miners inside his greenhouses. According to the San Diego Desert Miner, he ran everything 100% off-grid with solar and battery power and said he was profitable. Solar farming in general can be profitable for those simply selling to the grid, but it depends on the land's rental cost, geographic location, and the size of the solar installation. Recent estimates disclose that on average, a typical solar farm can produce between $21,000 and $42,000 per acre every year. Tam Hunt, the founder of a renewable energy project called Community Renewable Solutions, has outlined how solar energy could boost Bitcoin mining while at the same time reduce energy consumption. Hunt's study reveals that instead of selling electricity to the grid, mining cryptocurrency could be far more lucrative. The research claims that the solar plus Bitcoin operation pays for itself in about 2 years, and after the return on investment is completed, there is minimal risk of remaining. There is minimal risk remaining. This is because if the price of Bitcoin suddenly crashed below profitable levels, the operation has a backup plan because they can just sell the power to the grid. Hunt described how off-grid mining operations can be done in areas with no power lines and where acreage is extremely affordable. Under this scenario, the miners are connected to the internet via a satellite connection, but otherwise the entire project is off-grid. All solar power is used for mining. Hunt notes for this study, this kind of facility could also include on-site storage of both smooth production and to extend mining operations beyond daylight hours. Over the last few years, there's been a lot of FUD surrounding Bitcoin mining consuming too much energy. China's National Development and Reform Commission detailed on April 9th that the department believes Bitcoin mining wastes resources and pollutes the environment. But there's a lot of data and reports that show otherwise, and that mining rigs can also produce their own heat power as well. A recent CoinShares study indicates that 78% of Bitcoin miners utilize renewable energy sources. In March 2018, the co-founder of the Nakamoto X exchange, Camille Bricha, there's no way I'm pronouncing that, showed the world how he uses excess mining heat to grow tomatoes. Later that year, people read about a residential block in the freezing Russian province of Siberia with local grandmothers mining coins for profit and heat dissipation. Known as the Siberian babushkas, one woman explained how they used the hot air from miners to dry spices. All the hot air is perfect for drying pumpkin, tea, and herbs. It dries very quickly. In just one day, one of the babushkas explained, there are all kinds of methods people use to harness renewable energy to mine Bitcoin. Oddly enough, solar energy is not being used by major mining operations as the dominant renewables powering facilities that have been hydro and geothermal. Although last summer, reports indicated that Hadouken Party Limited was approved to build a 20-megawatt solar farm that will be specifically used to mine digital currency. The mining operation is said to be situated in Collie, Australia, near a power company called Muja that produces 854 megawatts of electricity. Similarly, if there were a sudden cryptocurrency price downturn and mining wasn't that profitable, Hadouken could simply sell the power to the grid. If individuals like Christian Ander have noticed that using solar generated electricity to mine Bitcoin makes 10 times what could be made selling the power to the grid, then many other people are likely aware of the same idea. So that's the end of it. And, you know, we can say what we want about Roger, but I'll give him this. I only had to replace the name of his shit coin twice in this entire thing. Kudos. I'm going to give credit where credit is due. So thank you for not making my mind explode having to read this. But that said, you know, a lot of us have said it before. I'm going to go ahead and say it again, that the green energy revolution is not going to come out of that twit AOC, and it's not going to come out of this Green New Deal. It's not going to come out of the far right side. It's not going to come out the central side. It's not going to come out the far left side. What's going to do it is probably Bitcoin. It's probably going to be the one thing that that really blows the lid off of how to make the investment in green energy really happen. Now, that said, there's talk on the street about the China trade war, and that China is threatening the U.S. with rare earth minerals, and that kind of sucks, because without rare earth minerals and a whole bunch of them, solar energy becomes panels and the technology and batteries and whatnot become a little bit more difficult. We'll have to see just where that whole train wreck goes. But the future looks pretty bright, except for Peter Woola, who says the current Bitcoin protocol is not quantum secure. Let's see what is going on here. This is out of Omar Faridi. From CryptoGlobe.com. He's writing on the 29th. William Kasarin, a Haskell and Rush computer programmer, has suggested not using Taproot, or at least carefully considering the implications. A recent published Bitcoin improvement proposal that aims to enhance the leading cryptocurrency's privacy and overall network efficiency. There's a tweet here that says, if you were worried about quantum computers, don't use Taproot. It's pay to pub key, not pub key hash. Kasarin, a Vancouver-based game developer, pointed out via Twitter that Taproot is pay to pub key and not pub key hash. He also questioned why the BTC protocol developers would integrate the complicated script validation logic associated with BIP Taproot as the cryptocurrency's code base, quote, might be insecure in 30 years from now. In response to Kasarin's comments, Mario Gibney, the customer support team lead at Blockstream, said that he was surprised, as he had not heard about it before. Kasarin also asked, quote, is it possible to have pay to pub key hash version of Taproot? According to prominent Bitcoin core developer Dr. Peter Woola, hashing public keys, quote, doesn't add any security. Woola, co-founder at Blockstream, added that the widely repeated claim that it protects against quantum computers is nonsense. He also clarified that, quote, anyone who ever reused an address or shared an XPub or used Electrum has their pub keys already public. Quote, Bitcoin outputs aren't secure against a quantum computer even when they're hashed. Responding to Woola's statement, Kasarin noted that there are theoretical proposed algorithms for quantum attacks on pub keys, but not hashes. The physics enthusiast then questioned Woola's claim regarding hashing public keys not being able to enhance security. He acknowledged that the pay-to-script hash, or P2SH, may have reduced security due to collisions. However, he asked Woola to point out the main arguments that suggest, quote, pub key attacks impossible. Woola remarked, it's not that pub key attacks are impossible, assuming a quantum computer. It's that in practice, Bitcoin outputs aren't secure against quantum computing, even when they're hashed. Kasarin then argued that you could buy yourself some in the in-flight case. He also mentioned that if he was operating a QC, then he'd focus on the already exposed outputs. Kasarin further noted, I can't imagine ever using Taproot for that reason. Pretty neat idea otherwise. In response, Woola stated, if there's ever evidence of theft due to a QC and 5 million BTC are readily available for the taking to such a hypothetical machine, do you think BTC will still have any value left? According to Kasarin, the only way Bitcoin would manage to survive is if users were aware of the fact that they can at least move to quantum secure outputs. Current state of QCs, IBM has 50 qubits, Google 72. Meanwhile, Woola mentioned, any unconfirmed transaction in flight exposes public keys, so if a quantum computer exists, at least moving coins around safely becomes impossible. Further, a massive fraction of the currency supply can be taken. Lastly, you likely have exposed your own pub key already. Given all, he added, given all those hypothetical attacks, attack models that pub key hashing doesn't help with at all, I think it's fair to say that Bitcoin as it exists today is not quantum secure, period. Confirming that QCs exist today and elaborating on their current state of development, Twitter user NoClone3 pointed out QCs already do exist in a primitive form, namely not error corrected. IBM has 50 qubits, Google has 72. Rigetti should deliver 128, Ion Q160. The burden of error correction depends on the number of needed operations and should be of an order of be on the order of 1,000 qubits times the logical qubit. So I don't know that much about quantum computing, but there seems to be, you know, if Wool is saying this, yeah, it's a little concerning. It's a little concerning, you know, no doubt. But and I've heard some talk. I think this was out of Marty Bent was talking to Matt O'Dell and they were interviewing Murad, and there was this notion of having the ledger. If something bad were to happen, or something like we had to move to a new hashing algorithm, or some kind of like full scale burn it all to the ground situation happens, that we'd just be able to move the UTXO set into another system. And this would seem to be a burn it all to the ground kind of situation if it were to occur. Now, the other thing is that how fast are quantum computers, how long is it going to take for quantum computing to get to a point where this kind of thing is a credible threat, and where will Bitcoin be at that time? So there's arguments on both sides of that. There's arguments that it's going to go really, really fast. And then there's arguments that it's just not going to happen for a long time. And 30 years out does seem like a fair amount of time to be able to either have some kind of plan in place or something like that. But at one point or another, quantum computing is going to happen, and Bitcoin has always been attacked, and it's going to be attacked then too. Will it survive? I don't know. It survived for 10 years under every conceivable attack vector known to humankind so far. Will it survive the rest of the attack vectors that are uncovered as we move on to the future? Well, that's always going to be a question. Would I run screaming to the hills? No, I don't think that that's a smart thing to do. And chances are really good that the very last chain that they'll hit is Bitcoin. They'll probably run, if there's any surviving shit coins out there, the low hanging fruit is always the easiest fruit. So just keep that in mind. And like I said, don't freak out. And I'm pretty sure the guys over at Blockstream, they obviously they're aware of the situation. I would imagine that there are some people in the group that are actually actively thinking about this problem. So don't worry too much about it. I would much rather worry about the buffoonery of Salesforce for IT Twitter account that says introducing Salesforce blockchain, the fast and easy way to create trusted partner networks. And I'm going to looking at their website. This is salesforce.com, and this is about their blockchain products. It says create trust networks to securely extend customer relations management to partners. Easily build blockchain apps and networks with the industry's first declarative blockchain platform natively integrated into CRM. It's just, it's Bitcoin, not blockchain, people. This is just ridiculous. So there's like a loyalty exchange network that they have. There's a blockchain builder. Oh, that just looks great. Build blockchain networks and apps with clicks. Allow low code tools to create networks and add partners. build and update the blockchain data model with clicks. That's right, people. Now it's just a click of a button and you got yourself a blockchain. If this isn't, I don't know what else is more stupid. I'm not even going to be watching these people. I don't like Salesforce in any way. Some of their crap that they've pulled over the past makes me not, I wouldn't trust them anyway. So there's that one. U.S. Congressmen urge presidential economic advisor to hold blockchain forum. This is out of Anna Alexandra. She's writing this on May the 29th. A group of United States congressmen has requested that Lawrence Kudlow, the director of the National Economic Council, hold a blockchain forum in a letter published on May the 24th. A group of seven congressmen, including Trey Hollingsworth, Darren Soto, Bill Foster, Tom Emmer, Ted Budd, Josh Gottenheimer, and David Schweikart, has submitted a request to hold a forum on blockchain technology. The council is the principal body through which the U.S. presidential administration considers economic policy matters. In addition to the forum, the congressman also asked to include the technology in initiatives promoted by the administration. In the request, the congressman note that the difficulty of applying purportedly outdated legislation to emerging technologies, stating that a lack of regulatory clarity could negatively impact the development of new tech like blockchain. The lawmakers further argued that the technology could change a variety of industries in the United States economy. Quote, blockchain technology is an example of digital innovation that has the potential to transform a myriad of industries. Not really. Through its ability to improve the transparency, efficiency, and security of transactions and information in the financial services, healthcare, insurance, trade finance, and supply chain management sectors, among others. In April, 21 representatives, including some of those mentioned above, sent a bipartisan letter to the United States Internal Revenue Service requesting guidance on how to report virtual currency taxes. The letter urged the IRS to provide guidance on tax consequences and basic reporting requirements for taxpayers that use virtual currencies, claiming that there is still substantial ambiguity on a number of important questions about the federal taxation of this emerging type of asset. In response to the request, IRS Commissioner Charles Redding stated that the agency has prioritized issuing relevant guidance. The instruction will specifically cover issues such as acceptable methods of calculation, cost basis assignment, and tax treatment of forks. So yeah, that's the other thing about shit forks is they put you, apparently it's like it puts you into a tax consequence possibility through no fault of your own. I didn't ask to get a whole crap load of BCH dumped on me. I didn't want it. I didn't want the whole thing to happen. And thankfully, because I got rid of it when I did, I didn't get BSV. And I'm glad of that too, because even though I'm not just because that they're shit coins and not just because that their leaders are maniacal, narcissistic weirdos who don't seem to really understand how any of this shit works, which you'll see later in today's show. But I didn't ask for those coins. So, I mean, would it be possible for me to sue them because they put me into a tax consequence that I never asked for? Now, that would never work because I don't have enough money to sue Ver, but is it possible that since this happened to everybody, are class action lawsuits possible that you've put me in a financial situation that I never asked for? That's an interesting question. I'd like to get a tax attorney that's actually familiar with blockchain to talk about that, because that would be really interesting. Sorry guys. I think I'm fighting off a cold here. Tax attorneys, expertise on that would be interesting. I think I might possibly know one, come to think of it. I'm tweet him a question or two about this. This is where we get into the more crap about really ugly coins, is that scammers boost BSV price with fake Satoshi confirmation. This is out of John Biggs, coming out of CoinDesk, writes, scammers boosted the price of BSV Wednesday by publishing a fake news alert purporting to show that BSV's creator is also Bitcoin's, masquerading as the Chinese news site CoinBull. The bogus alert claimed that Craig Wright had transferred Bitcoin from the so-called Satoshi wallet to prove his identity. The result, a $60 boost in the BSV price in less than 10 hours. Wright, who led the fork that created BSV in November of 2018, has maintained for years that he is Satoshi Nakamoto, the pseudonymous architect of Bitcoin, but his claims continue to be met with widespread skepticism. If he really were Satoshi, many critics have said, then Wright should control the private keys to the wallets that mine the first Bitcoin, and thus needs only to move some of those coins to settle the matter. Hence the alert read, CSW transferred 50K BTC from the biggest BTC wallet to Binance, which confirmed he is the real Satoshi. As such, CZ will relist BSV and make an official apology on Twitter. These scams are common and lucrative. Quote, the trick is easy and constantly used by many scams. All Chinese crypto media circulate the breaking news via pictures as above in WeChat instead of a news link. So anybody can just use the same theme template and Photoshop one, said Dovey Wan, founding partner at Primitive Ventures. Coinbull responded on WeChat with its own announcement, writing, Coinbull announcement regarding recent malicious Photoshopped image to impersonate Coinbull to spread rumors. Recently, we have received feedback from users that certain people have maliciously sent out Photoshopped Coinbull news alerts to spread rumors about Binance and CSW, which had bad consequences. We remind our users, again, not to trust any rumors and not to spread any rumors. Thank you for your support. BSV hit a $193 7-day high on the rumor and is leveling out at above 180 as of this writing. Let's see where it's at right now. BSV is at 187 right now. God, just amazing how stupid people can get. Yeah, as of this writing. So then it ends off with a tweet from Dovey Wan responding to her own that was basically breaking the news. And it says, I don't know how much this contribute to the pump, but this fake news snapshot went viral in many Chinese retail groups around the same time. And folks, parentheses, thought it was real, in parentheses, got super excited about it. Chinese retail is the best herd ever. Man, that's a hell of a slap in the face, but she's right. I mean, there's no reason that BSV should be over a buck, much less at 190. So, yeah, you know, what are you going to do with that? Okay, now this last one before I end this, I want to, this isn't about Bitcoin, but this is spooky shit right here. Kierkegaard Emil, or Emil Kierkegaard, off his Twitter account writes, amazing machine learning results reconstructing the face from voice recording. Voice recognition is also nearing perfection. All anonymous YouTubers, etc., who use their own voice will be doxxed. It's inevitable. Text basis of perfect police state. And he's got a link to what will take you to a PDF. The first link is through axiv.org, arxiv.org, which is a Cornell University. It's sort of their near as I can tell, it's their repository of published papers. So this was submitted May the 23rd on 2019. And if you find the link for the PDF, you can download the whole PDF. Now, this is a full-blown research paper that it's been submitted, but I don't know if it's been accepted for publication yet. I doubt it, because if it was submitted, and if their date means that it was submitted for publication, then they're about 6 months away from getting this published, if it gets published or accepted and published at all. It also may mean that it already is published, but I don't think so. This looks like a draft. I'm going to read the abstract. And the title is Speech to Face, Learning the Face Behind a Voice. The abstract says, how much can we infer about a person's looks from the way they speak? In this paper, we study the task of reconstructing a facial image of a person from a short audio recording of that person speaking. We design and train a deep neural network to perform this task using millions of natural internet YouTube videos of people speaking. During training, our model learns voice face correlation that allow it to produce images that capture various physical attributes of the speakers, such as age, gender, and ethnicity. This is done in a self-supervised manner by utilizing the natural co-occurrence of faces and speech in internet videos. Without the need to model attributes explicitly, we evaluate and numerically quantify how and in what manner our speech-to-face reconstructions obtained directly from audio resemble the true face images of the speakers. Okay. Abstracts of scientific papers are always, always difficult. All right, but this is out of MIT, and all these guys that are on this paper are credible bros and sisters. And reading abstracts from scientific journals is difficult. Believe me, I know. I lived in science for 10 years of my life and had to deal with this crap. So I'm just going to give you the breakdown here. It means that at one point or another, they're just going to be able to nail down my face just from this podcast all by itself without any help. I've made a couple of YouTube videos. I guarantee they've already been scraped. So my face is out there. It's only a matter of time that they are able to literally just play an audio recording of somebody talking. And even if there's a video out there or not, that face is probably going to be pretty close, because I got to tell you, I'm looking at the results and they're really close. They're nailing down ethnicity, they're nailing down general age, and they're nailing down general facial architecture and construction. And it's spooky as hell, man. So for all you guys that, you know, are never going to release your face or whatever, be aware, this shit's coming, and it's going to be one more nail in the coffin of freedom if we keep letting this shit happen. I don't know how to stop it, though. I really don't. I wish I had a solid answer, but calling your congressman is not that answer, because they just don't listen anymore. Anyway, that's going to be it for your morning roundup. Statistics off of bitinfocharts.com has Bitcoin at 8,436. It looks like the low is going to be over at Bitfinex at 8,460 cents. 325,000 transactions have been made over the last 24 hours, giving us about 13,500 transactions per hour on average. 2.025 million BTC moved in those transactions in the last 24 hours, with 85,000 BTC being sent per hour on average, with an average transaction value of 6.22 BTC and a median of 0.054 BTC, or roughly around $450 US. Block time is long at 10 minutes, 50 seconds. 1.52 BTC are being taken on for fees on a per block basis, and the fees over the last 24 hours have been 199 BTC. The hash rate has decreased in the last 24 hours by 6.6%, but we are still at 54 exahashes per second. The last GitHub commit was a couple of days ago on the 29th of May. From left to right, Ethereum is at 260, Bcash is at 436, Litecoin is at 110, BSV is at 186, Ethereum Classic is at 8.5, Dogecoin is at 0.0033, and this time Dogecoin is actually beating Bcash, because Bcash volume or transactions have fallen off the cliff to about 20,000. I wonder what happened. Because they were doing so well every day at 60,000, and then all of a sudden they lose. I'm so sick of it, man. It's bullshit. BSV is sitting at 35,000 transactions, but you can imagine why, because of all the fake news. And it wouldn't surprise me a bit if Craig Stewart Wright and Calvin Ayer didn't orchestrate that entire thing to get rich, because they are exactly like those people. So anyway, in either event, those are your vital statistics for the day. Marty's Bent for Wednesday, May 29th, 2019, issue number 493, Erlay, a step toward an ideal. He's got a tweet from Brian Bishop that says, Erlay, colon, bandwidth efficient transaction relay for Bitcoin, and then gives a link to the linuxfoundation.org paper by Peter Woola, Gleb Namenko, Greg Maxwell, and others. So let's see what Marty's got to say about this. Here is a pleasant surprise that was dropped on the world a couple of days ago by Gleb via the Bitcoin mailing list. Erlay, an efficient transaction relay protocol for Bitcoin, co-authored by Gleb, Brian Bishop, Peter Woola, and Greg Maxwell. Erlay, if implemented, would materially reduce the bandwidth usage of Bitcoin full nodes, making the network considerably more efficient from a node operator's perspective and creating the potential for a more decentralized network, as it would be possible to run full nodes in areas with suboptimal internet connectivity and on less powerful devices like tablets or cell phones. In this rag, we harp on the idea of decentralization being an ideal that we strive for, something that is achieved in gradual steps as the Bitcoin network extends its roots in meat space via hardware, in the digital world via software, and in our minds via an idea. Erlay, if implemented, would be a big step toward this ideal. Just look at the performance enhancements that could be achieved. As you can see, Erlay would severely reduce the amount of bandwidth needed to connect to other nodes when compared to the current transaction relay method. Currently, if you are connected to 32 nodes, it would take 17.3 gigabytes of bandwidth per month to relay transactions via your node. With Erlay, this bandwidth burden would be reduced to 0.94 per month. Whoa, man. On top of this announcement, cost would be reduced from 4.33 per month gigabytes per month to 0.7 gigabytes. Talk about efficiency gains. After reading through the white paper, it seems that the biggest trade-off will be with latency. We would get better bandwidth efficiencies for an increase of 2.6 seconds to relay unconfirmed transactions across the whole network, from 3.15 seconds to 5.75 seconds. The authors seem to think this is a reasonable trade-off. What about you? This is just a paper at this point. There is no BIP to implement this into any protocol yet. If it checks out to work as advertised, I think it will be a no-brainer. So we will be following the developments of Erlay and keeping you abreast of the situation. Our solemn duty to you freaks. Peep the paper for yourself here, and he gives a link. The authors can explain this stuff much better than Uncle Marty can. Final thought, huge fan of white shoes. Big hater of getting white shoes dirty. Yeah, I never bought white shoes. Anyway, thanks, Marty. We appreciate it. Song time, and today it's from Pink Floyd, and this is dedicated to all the people that we've lost along the way, to either through shitcoinery, rage quitting, no coin, turning into no coiners, people who are being sued by certain people that are frauds, HODL or not, and all the other people that are, you know, that somehow or another we haven't heard from in a while because of various forces acting against them. Again, this is dedicated to all of you.
you think you can tell heaven from hell, blue skies from pain. Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail, a smile from a veil? Do you think you can tell? Did they get you to train your heroes for ghosts, hot ashes for trees, hot air for a cool breeze, cold comfort for change? Did you exchange a walk-on part in the war for a lead?
Daily Train Wrecked is brought to you by BNN Bloomberg. Those idiots decided that it would be a real good idea to be okay with Calvin Ayer coming on their soundstage and spouting essentially nonsense. Let's just listen to a clip of it.
What I am is a big proponent of regulation. I actually want regulation. And BSV, one of the reasons why I'm attracted to it is because it's actually been designed by Craig from scratch to be regulatory friendly. So in addition to massively scaling and being a stable platform following the internet model, so it's got stability enabling you to invest real application development on top of it, mm-hmm. it also is designed to be regulatory friendly.
If BSV is successful as establishing itself as the, as you say, it only needs to be one, what happens to Bitcoin and all of the other variations that are splintered off?
Well, I think in the near term, Bitcoin, BTC, can exist, but if BSV scales, continues to follow its scaling roadmap, there's just no need for any of the rest, so I think they will be absorbed.
So they won't lose all their value?
I think people will cross across, and I think everything will be absorbed into BSV, the dominant chain.
And you know, I'm just not going to waste another single second on this crap. This is amazing. Amazing that they had him on. And here's what I, this is okay. I am going to waste a second on it. Cause there is one thing I want to say about this. The way this works is that it's not like Bloomberg is sitting around like trying to find people to put on their show. They are actually being solicited by people who want to be on their show. And in, I think in this case, I think Calvin paid them at, like money basically to have to be a billboard ad for this shitcoin. They did. I doubt very seriously that they went out and said, we've got to get Calvin Ayer on this show. Because if they knew anything about Calvin Ayer's past, they would not have that dude on a soundstage anywhere in Canada at all, ever, ever, ever. His whole past, everything about this guy is just screams to me, cannot trust, do not trust, will not trust. Anyway, that smoldering pile is your daily train wrecked. And it's also your terrible joke corner, because that is a joke. I couldn't come up with a better joke than to play that. So it's doing double duty today. And my voice is like ragged. If you can't hear it, I'm pretty sure I have got some kind of weird, like spring cold or something like that. Cause man, this was just a rough show, and I'm really sorry about that, guys, but I just didn't want to just not do one. So, take it as it is. Again, sorry it was so rough. Just not feeling all that well. And yeah, man, this, when you move like a couple of hundred miles away, 100 or 150 miles away from where you've lived for like 20 years, I totally forgot about that. Now that I've been here for where we're living for almost a year, that's when you start getting, your immune system starts getting kind of pummeled by, bugs that you don't normally encounter. Even though it's still West Texas, 100 miles away, it's a completely different landscape. I've talked about this a couple times before. For all you guys that look at Texas and just you think it's just flat, understand this. It goes from the hottest of deserts to the deepest of pine forests to mountains that that rival some of the ones, like some of the smaller ones in Colorado, because it's basically still, so they're not really technically the Rocky Mountains, but they're sort of that same type of formation. So from mountains to coast, to forest, to plains, to grasslands, to hill country, Texas has got it all. And we don't have any property tax, we don't have any state income tax here. And a couple of people that have tried to do it at the state level got their ass primaried for doing that. Okay, so they literally lost their job for even suggesting the notion of putting in a state income tax. Also, Austin is a hotbed of Bitcoin development. In fact, I think that may be one of the, I need to do something different with the show. And I'm thinking of trying to contact only the people that are like Bitcoiner, that are doing Bitcoin work in Texas, and find out if there's a difference between the quote unquote Bitcoin Texas scene and some other things. So no state income tax, hotbed of Bitcoin development. If you guys are looking to get out of wherever it is that you are and stop paying high taxes and want to work on Bitcoin, come down to Texas, man. And if you do, I'll see you on the other side.
This has been Bitcoin and I'm your host, David Bennett. I hope you enjoyed today's episode and hope to see you again real soon. Have a great day.